the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto-related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
While everybody's been focused on Bitcoin's disappointing price performance in 2025, a few other things slipped under the radar. Corporate Bitcoin holdings now account for more than 5% of total supply. And that's just the start. Stablecoin transactions now exceed Visa volumes by a substantial margin, and real-world assets are beginning to be tokenized and traded at a furious pace, unlocking value in this new economy. That's according to a new Binance report that's just been brought out, covering the themes to watch in 2026. And joining us to discuss this is South Africa Country Manager for Binance, Hannes Wessels. Hi, Hannes. It's good to talk to you again. One of the big takeaways from this new report from Binance is the rise of stablecoins. There's nothing particularly new about that. I mean, we have heard that quite a lot over the last year. But this report that you brought out has put some astonishing numbers to this stablecoin activity and the size of the market. And it also gives us an idea what direction the world of finance is going. And it looks more and more like traditional finance is encroaching into the world of stablecoins rather than the other way around. Is that the way that you're seeing it?
I think the numbers certainly point that way, Kieran, and great to speak to you again. What we're seeing from a stablecoin perspective, and I put on my South African and African lens on this, is, you know, people still want a reserve currency. We still express so many of our commodities, our stocks, etc., in dollar prices. It's just the human mind, I think, is the familiar. Now you add ease of transaction, settlement, etc., to that familiarity. For me, it's almost logical that people then pivot to stable. I think on top of that, you look at many African countries where the banking system, the payment systems are just not functioning as I think we've become accustomed to in South Africa, where it works really well. Then, you know, this type of thing, peer-to-peer or even business-to-customer, etc., we're using stablecoin is just so much better. So that for me is clearly a sign that it's here to stay, and I think we're going to see much more volumes this year on this basis. And yeah, it's becoming political playball as well now. We've seen this the Genius Act in the US being promulgated. So I think we're in for another good year on this.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. The fact that people have been saying the dollar is dead. Well, of course, stablecoins is buttressing the dollar in a way that very few people imagined. It was originally conceived of as a way for crypto traders where they could park their profits. But now, of course, there's been so many other use cases that have developed for it, and it's much quicker and it's much cheaper than doing it through the traditional banking system. I want to go on to one of the other themes that's highlighted in this report that you just put out, and that's the size of corporate holdings of Bitcoin, now about 5%. That's pretty astonishing, you know, if you think about it, how quickly that happened. It really was just a couple of years. But there's a fear amongst retail investors, and there always was this fear, that once it's opened up to the corporate market, that you would see more and more corporate penetration of this, and it would end up controlling and dominating the price. I guess the question is this good or bad for the market, or is it just inevitable we're going to have to live with it?
I think it's, for me, an inevitability, but something we need to adopt. I mean, just firstly on the definition of corporate, is it, you know, are we looking at this purely from a corporate perspective? So let's say a South African corporate like a Pepco, etc. The best international example, therefore, being Strategy, run by Michael Saylor. I think he's on a completely different trajectory where he's trying to make this a Bitcoin holding company. So I don't see that as a traditional corporate holding a reserve asset. I look at this more from the institutional perspective, where we've seen the US ETFs entering the market. We've seen what happened to the Bitcoin price, where I think a lot of that volatility has disappeared. I also think humans have short memories. You know, when there's a lot of positive volatility, we all smile and we cheer. And then when there's a lot of negative volatility, this is the worst thing ever, you know. And now that there's stability, that's also not a good thing. So you can have one of the two. For me, it is still part of that adoption curve. But I also think, I don't think the corporates is the big thing here. I think the price determinant, if that's what's really bothering people, I think the price determinant now is a liquidity play. And that's something completely separate from the corporates. I think that is a US debt extension or function of US debt. I think it's a function of the US economy, and I think it's a function of US interest rates. So the corporates getting into this, I think, is a good thing. We don't always just want to get a bunch of retail people, because it's never going to grow. It's never going to go widely adopted. So no, I don't have a particular issue with that. I think we should focus more then on the US economy and what that impact will have, the macroeconomy will have on the price per se.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that has been pointed out before is that the Bitcoin price is very, well, I'd say very tightly correlated, but quite correlated to M2 money supply growth. So when you talk about liquidity, sure. You know, as long as the world governments and central banks are printing money, then we're going to expect to see that this is going to be reflected in a positive Bitcoin price. Hasn't been the case in the last few months. There's been a little bit of a break in that correlation. Gold being the great story of 2025, but as many people have pointed out, you would expect to see Bitcoin at some point resume that correlation. It would get back on track. Do you agree with that viewpoint?
I do. And again, we need to look at this from an institutional perspective. Let's work on the basis. I mean, I don't like absolute perspectives where it's now an institutional asset, not a retail asset. It's a spectrum. We have the institutions on the spectrum. And what institutions do is they've got risk buckets, they've got liquidity buckets, and Bitcoin gets allocated into one of those buckets, which in this case is the far right hand side. It's a risk asset. Where we geopolitically, this is not a political discussion, but we know there's a lot of geopolitical uncertainty in the world. And that's when you see the likes of gold, silver, and I also point people towards the PGMs. Look at what the PGMs have done over the last quarter. So you see that pivot into what is considered the safer assets. I think when there's a bit more stability, and I don't know when that is, I think then you're going to see diversification into the more risky assets. But for me, that type of playbook still makes a lot of sense. We can still see gold, I think, today at another all-time high. And yeah, so the playbook makes sense. It's a case of when we pivot from, kind of say, one phase to the next.
I wanted to ask you about Binance itself and in South Africa and in Africa. Did you have a good year last year?
Yeah, we did. I think we continued to do really well from a liquidity, from a volume perspective. You know, a lot of this has to do with the fact that we've got the lowest commissions in the market. Well, there's a couple that may match us. But I think especially on the retail side, it's still a reliable and a cheap platform to work. And I mean, people always say you can have one of the two. Well, no, you can have both. We've certainly seen very good activity on our spot transactions. We've seen in South Africa, we've seen a very interesting pivot towards our pay product. We're working with our partners at Money Badger. As you know, we've opened that up beyond Pick and Pay now to Zapper. We've got Bootleggers Coffee. We've got a couple of other franchises on there as well. And people really adopted it. I saw some of the data yesterday and it looks fantastic. So Bitcoin is moving, crypto in South Africa and Binance specifically is moving beyond just a pure investment play now into payments as well, which I think is great. We're working very well with our new banking partners, NetBank, on a couple of very interesting initiatives. They're very keen to work with us. We've got a Web3 discussion going. So I think you can expect big things from us this year working with them. And yeah, all of this type of stuff, just bring these two worlds of TradFi and DeFi, you know, closer together. I still think it's two different streams, but the closer they get together, I think the better they work.
Many people may not know that Binance has got its own blockchain system called BNB Chain. And it's grown in popularity amongst developers of finance products because it supports both high-frequency retail activity and institutional adoption, like real-world assets, which is going to become one of the big stories, as your report points out, is going to be one of the big stories of this year. And it really is rushing in at us very fast. This ability to take something that is not very liquid, it can be real estate, it can be coins, it can be art, it can be anything, and turning that into something that can be then traded in a digital way. That story is happening, but how fast is this coming at us, do you think? And what is BNB Chain's role in all of this?
So let's start with BNB Chain. I mean, this is our native chain, but we do separate the two as well. But Binance does not own or control the BNB Chain. It's just our native token. Why this is important is that When you do a listing on Binance, you know you've got liquidity if you trade it against BNB coin. So let's say you've got ABC coin, that's a new listing. Yes, there is liquidity in Bitcoin. Yes, there is liquidity in Tether. But because they're not native to Binance, the settlement on those are much slower. Where this is our native coin, the settlement is almost immediate because we access that pool. I think that goes for most of the big ecosystems. We obviously the one, Solana's the other one. I think you need to look quite far beyond that then to see something that really works. I know there's a lot of XRP advocates out there. I think it serves a very different purpose in a different market. But I think between Binance and Solana, those are the big ones. And I'm particularly pleased with the liquidity ours bring on our platform, because also if you look at our global footprint, it creates that liquidity almost instantaneously across borders when we've been traded against it. So that's very good for us. The speed at which it's coming, I think there's a faster train now in terms of AI adoption. It's you look at the speed at which AI is kind of hitting us and will hit us. If it hasn't hit you yet, I think you live on a rock somewhere. But I still think it pales into significance at the rate of acceleration on AI. So for me, it is fast, but it's not, you know, a case of you wake up one morning and stuff just doesn't work anymore. There'll plenty of room for adjustment to get on the train, so to speak. We always ask people, please go to our academy page, familiarize yourself with how this works. I think it's something that's developed quickly, but I don't think it's something that puts anybody in danger or at risk, given the speed at which it's developing.
All right, let's wrap it up here now. And I just want to touch on a few things. What do you think are some of the big themes that we can expect in 2026? AI, you've touched on that. Maybe just elaborate on how you see that encroaching into the crypto space. Themes that we've spoken about, which is real world assets and stable coins. I'm sure these are going to continue to be stories this year, right?
They will be. Let's start with those. I think real world assets, again, there's many subcategories there. I think for me, the most important one is fixed assets, properties, cars. I think that's going to be at the far end of the spectrum. I think we're going to try other stuff first. If I say us, I mean humanity at large, what's going to work for us, what doesn't. I think where we test this is with sport tokens and stuff like that. There's a couple of interesting developments in South Africa. There's a couple of interesting developments elsewhere, where especially it's like football as a sport, where you get issued with a fan token. Some of it's tradable, some of it's not tradable. That's how you see if something works. I think if it works, then we can move beyond that. I think for governments to adopt it at, can I say, asset transfer level, like properties and cars, maybe that's 2 to 3 years away. But it's definitely, that's one of the big themes. I think the other one is AI, and we need to look for the intersection of AI and crypto. Where is that going to happen? I think a lot of that is agentic, where if you are able to get an AI agent going, and it's not an easy thing as it stands, I think we're 6 months away from something where that's going to be much more practical. You can connect an AI agent to a crypto DeFi wallet to transact wherever you see fit and whatever's available at that stage. I think that's the stuff that becomes really powerful and interesting. So that's what we are waiting for. That's what we want to see. And there is definitely a lot of development in that space. I think it's just not really hit us on a day-to-day basis, but I think it's definitely coming.
Fantastic stuff. Thank you so much, Hannes Wessels, for joining us on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. And we look forward to speaking to you again.
Thanks, Kieran. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.